You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Thank you so much for listening and getting to some of your comments. A caller says, we grew up using the N-word and it was in wee nursery rhymes. We had never seen a black person and did not realise it referred to them. So when we inadvertently use what is known as racist words, it's not to offend anyone. As example is, am I black, when someone ignored us? I never heard that before. That's part of who I am, but because black people came to Ireland, I'm supposed to change. I'm not insulting anyone and never would. Can those who move to Ireland just when in Rome do as the Romans do? That's an interesting take on it. But why would you want to continue, if you're being ignored, why would you want to be able to continue saying, am I black, and a black person standing beside you? I don't know. I know where you're coming from. But in relation to Brendan O'Carroll, I'm not quite sure what he said, but he is a man of the world and he's working over in multicultural England. So he actually went over to England to do it. He didn't stay here and they came here. Why can black people use the N-word and it's okay, but when white people use it, it's deemed as racist? Well, there's a long history to that and about ownership of words, and you see it in different communities as well. Hi, Greg. Things have just got too expensive in Ireland, even for a night away. It would take a week's wages with you, is a general comment from a listener. Another, we employ 10 people in a small business and pay rates, but feel like we're getting nothing for those payments. We end up picking up the rubbish outside and feel like we've to do everything ourselves, which I can imagine is very frustrating. Right, okay, just a couple of things to mention. Members of the public can now use a new telephone number to report any public lighting faults. This is something we've covered on the show now for the last 2 or 3 weeks. In fact, this came in at the start of this month, but no harm mentioning it again. A new contractor took over the servicing of public lights. There was a gap there where stuff didn't seem to be getting done. But there's two ways you can do it. You can ring a number, or there's actually a really quite a good website where you can actually click your lights that are out. I would advise, even if you prior to October 1st reported lights being out in your area, that you actually do it again. So the new company definitely has wind of them. And also, if you were one of those that contacted us about lights and they were fixed since the start of October, I'd appreciate the feedback on that as well. But anyway, there's a new contractor out, Skyline. They are fixing the lights and their number is 1-800-150-1150 is the number. 1-800-150-1150. No harm to have that, although it's very useful if you have access to the internet to use the electricityline.ie website, electricityline.ie. I also wish to mention that Warriskies Christmas Lights, Kerrykeel 2024, the annual concert in conjunction with Fannet Presbyterian Church. It's in the Presbyterian Church Hall, Kerrykeel. It's on Thursday, the 31st of October at 8:15 p.m. There's performances from a host of local artists, admission by donation at the door. And this helps, I suppose, to keep this tradition going. The chosen charity is Cancer Care West Donegal, which is a fantastic charity. I think they raised close to 100,000, in excess of 100,000 this year. And we were delighted to be able to have taken part in that and raised over 8,000, which is fantastic, for over 7,000. I can't remember the exact figure. And just to mention now that we are going to be playing Vision Ireland Bingo. It's jackpot day today. The jackpot is big money. You can win it by buying a single book for a fiver. You can get a double book for a tenner. You can have a bit of fun with it, of course. It's only for fun, right? We don't want you to buy in books you can't afford. But if you can afford and play for fun, you're also supporting Vision Ireland. It's one of the key funding sources for that service here in Donegal. And recently, we've had some great wins. Cost Cutters Quarter Hawk, €400 won out of a book there. Solo Letterkenny, €600. Harkins Refoe, €800. Boyce's in Carrigart, someone won €1,200 off a bingo book sold in Boyce's. And Maples in Milford, €1,600. A winning book was sold there. Maybe you're going to be a big winner today. Now, the independent panel, this is the Truth and Recovery independent panel, is seeking testimony relating to mother and baby institutions, Magdalene laundries and workhouses in Northern Ireland from 1922 to 1995 and their related pathways and practices. We covered this a couple of weeks ago with a baby born in one of these institutions, appealing for people to, have their say, to get their story across. Professor Leanne McCormick is Truth Recovery Independent Panel Co-Chair and joins us on the programme now. Thanks so much for your time, Leanne. It's great to speak to you.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg.
Right, so talk to us or remind people of the process that's underway at the moment, Leanne.
So in 2023, a 10-person Truth Recovery Independent Panel was set up, and I'm the co-chair of that with Professor Sean O'Connell. And at this stage in the process, really the panel is coming before a public inquiry. And one of our key roles and key remits is about gathering testimony. So we're on the call out really for people to come forward and speak to us. And we've got some drop-in sessions. We've a drop-in session in the City Hotel in Derry on Wednesday, the 30th of October, between 2 and 4, and then between 6 and 8. If people would like to come and find out some more information about giving testimony, about the process. If they're not sure, maybe if their experiences aren't what we're looking for, this is a chance to come and talk to the panel or some of the testimony facilitators there as well. Because sometimes people are not sure what we're looking for and who it is exactly that we want to speak to.
Yeah, so obviously we can't go through all the information that will be available in these dropping centres, but for those listening, either to encourage them to attend or in fact to encourage them to give testimony, So how will it happen or how is it facilitated?
So we have thought really hard and really carefully about the process. One of the key things that with the role of the independent panel is about making sure that we take testimony in a non-adversarial format. So this is not in any way sort of a scary process. It's not a process where you're going to be cross-examined about what you're saying. You can phone up there. There's a number. If I can give the number, if that's okay.
Please, and we'll retain it here, of course.
It's 02890-520-263. And there's an email address as well, which is testimony@independentpanel.org.uk. All the information is on our website. And if you just even put Independent Panel Truth Recovery into Google, it'll come up and you'll be able to see the information there. But there's somebody on the phone between Monday and Friday, 11 to 12 and 3 to 4, and you can leave a voice message at any time. And at that point, somebody will come back to you very quickly. And we've got very experienced testimony facilitators who will come back and talk you through the process. There's support available from the Victim and Survivor Service at the beginning of the process, during the process, after the process. So there's support the whole way through. So people don't need to feel that they're going to go something which for many people is incredibly private, it's personal, and it's really traumatic that they're going to be left on their own to deal with this.
Right. So
this
if someone does, and someone may be speaking about it for the very first time, and who's to say, there's so many different scenarios, okay? But if they feel that sort of opening this wound, or however they might phrase it themselves, might be distressing to them, there is support for them.
Yes.
So it might have absolutely wider benefits actually than just sharing the testimony potentially.
Yes, and we have had people who've come forward to speak who've said, talked about the sense of relief that they felt in speaking about this and who've been really positive about the process. And again, on the website, there are some videos taking you through the process and some testimonials as well as people who have given testimony and how they have experienced it as well. And testimony can be given. We have offices in Belfast, but the facilitators will come to people's own houses if they would prefer, or if they would prefer to go, say, to a hotel, a neutral space, or we can use the premises of WAVE throughout Northern Ireland as well. So there's lots of ways to do this. Testimony also can be given online or in a written form. And we're trying to make the reach as far as possible as well. So people outside of the island of Ireland as well that we're trying to reach to.
There may well be, and in fact I know there are, those say for instance now living in border counties or non-border counties in the Republic. Again, they're very much encouraged to engage with this process. Yeah. Okay. And also too, there might be people who feel that they can't articulate it correctly or they don't have the words to describe. They're assisted presumably as well in that regard. There is no sort of wrong answer here, is there?
No, yeah. No, absolutely not. And this is not about a series of questions or right or wrong answers. This is really taking people through their experiences in a really careful and considered and sensitive way.
There's a high personal value to this information. Especially sharing it with a stranger, with absolutely all the supports that are there. So what happens to that information? How is it treated? I'm sure there's absolute confidentiality, but how is that information treated and what's it used for?
So in terms of how it's treated, you're absolutely right. This is a very personal, private, confidential information, and we treat it in that way very carefully and confidentiality. When you give your testimony, it will be transcribed. The transcription will come back to you and you're able to have a look at it then and see if there's anything that you feel maybe you weren't, that it wasn't represented right, or there's something that you wasn't clear, you can make those changes then. That testimony then is redacted. So any personal information or names are all taken out of that testimony at that point in time. And there are only a few members of the independent panel who have access to that. It's kept very on secure systems, who will actually see it and will then only be seeing the redacted version as well. So people can have total confidence that their information and anything that would identify them is kept very securely and kept very safely. And the importance of giving testimony, there are a number of reasons why it's really important. One, because when we're writing our report, we're trying to gather information about the experiences of people and what they've gone through in institutions. And you can't get that from the written records. Those stories, those experiences are not there in the records. When we gather that information, also from some of the testimonies that we've had so far, people have been able to bring our attention to things like baby homes that we weren't aware of, or private nursing homes, a couple in Derry actually that people have drawn to our attention that are now on our list of things to look at. So it's changing the way that we understand things, the knowledge that we've got. Our report will then feed into the public inquiry that's coming. We will be able to advise on the issues that should be dealt with in public inquiry. So testimony really is informing the whole process, and it's key to it as well. And as well as people who have been spent time in these institutions, we're also interested in people who are aware of the process. They might have been staff members, they might have volunteered in institutions, they might have had family members. We're interested in the wide spectrum. You might have lived next door to the baby home in Fawn, or you might have lived close to the Good Shepherd Convent on the waterside. We're interested in your experiences, what you saw. You might have been a social worker or a midwife or a probation officer or somebody mm-hmm. had experience with women and girls who might have been in these institutions. So we're really interested in the wide range of experiences to understand how they ran, how they operated, and to get a wider picture.
And the scope really is can't be determined at this point, because it will be determined really in the round following this process.
Yeah.
At the moment, obviously your panel is gathering records, a lot of records, 4,500+ records, which obviously have to be processed and what have you. And it's very possible that some engaging in this process, that you're holding information right now about them, whether you know it or they know it yet. You know what I mean? The information's not necessarily yeah. be connected with the people. What can you say about that? Or how will people be notified, if they wish to be or not, I don't know, about records that pertain to them?
Well, one of the key thing, one of the issues that's come up very clearly through testimony is that people often have issues about getting access to their own records. And one of the things that the panel has been working on is about providing guidance in terms of access to records. So the guidance has just gone onto our website. So again, if people are beginning to think about, I want to try and find out my records, I don't know where they are, or I've tried and I've had issues trying to find them, I would encourage them to go onto the website and to look. We've got a lot of guidance about all of the institutions, about where records are, about how to find out about the process, what to do if you're unsure, if you've got all the information that you think you're entitled to receive as well. And there is also guidance from Adopt NI have advocates who can help people through the journey of not only if they were adopted, but also if they were in any of the institutions relating to this process about trying to find their records as well.
And how are people who may have been in the laundries, the institutions, the workhouses, and they have compartmentalised that, they don't want to revisit that, do they have to be fearful that they could get unwanted contact, or do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yes, no, absolutely not. In terms of records as well, the same process and the same confidentiality is applied to records as it would be to somebody's testimony. So records that have gone from institutions into the Public Record Office of Northern Ireland that have been digitised, that information is kept, again, confidentially, if I get my word out, and securely. There is no the access to that is very carefully controlled. There are only certain members of the panel as
so,
well.
So just in relation to that, sorry, just more clear question, and I'll move on and let you away then at that point. But if I was a mother in one of these babies' institutions, my information may well be in some of these 4,500 records, but I don't want anything to do with this process. And my son, who I've had no contact with, and I don't want to, for an example, is also contained, information is contained within these records. Who's, what is the system there in that, you know, the person, the baby, will want answers. Me, the parent, I've moved forward, I can't face that, I don't want. How is that reconciled?
So again, this process comes down to individuals who, again, as you say, those paths and what people want and how they want to move forward with this might be very different. So say, for example, someone, an adopted child, now adult, wants to find their mother. That's a process that is managed often by either the adoption agencies or the trusts who hold those adoption records. Mm-hmm. And again, the process is set out, but that, in a sense, as an independent panel, we don't hold any remit for any of that contact tracing, and that's managed very carefully.
That may well just feed into the systems that are established and already there.
Those are already established.
And just very finally, so it's absolutely clear, and I'm sure it already is what does this all feed into? So it's a public inquiry. When is that scheduled to take place? How long may it last? Will people be invited to give their testimony in person at that? Maybe some of those questions have yet to be determined. But as I say, I've done a couple of these and I'm not sure I've asked that question. So what's all this definitively feeding into?
So it is, and it is a complicated process, and it's the wider truth recovery process has got many aspects to it, one of which includes redress, and there has just been a public consultation around redress. The hope with redress, for example, is that will happen sooner rather than later. That process will be decided and that the redress payments will happen quite quickly. In addition to that, the public inquiry. One of the things that the panel has been pushing for in our interim report is that a chair designate of the public inquiry would be appointed as soon as possible, because that means that we can feed our work very much into the design of the public inquiry, to advise on what should be included in the public inquiry, and to ensure that the public inquiry is taking on board the testimonies that we're gathering as well. So legislation has to be passed in terms of a public inquiry, but there is a hope that the chair designate will be appointed as soon as possible, and that into early 2025 in terms of the legislation of the public inquiry. So at the minute, I think it's looking at around some point in 2025 for a public inquiry to be established.
Okay, listen, thank you so much for your time. The best way to get information, we've retained the number that Leanne gave a little earlier on, but the URL is a little bit clunky. I found to get information on this that the easiest way, Truth Recovery Northern Ireland, it's the top search there as well. So I think that's the best way. And have a read through and just see if now is the time. And in relation to details of the drop-in sessions, just give us a recap of those, because that's primarily obviously why we invited you on. So the drop-in sessions are upcoming.
So they are on the 30th of October, Wednesday the 30th of October, in the City Hotel in Derry. And they're from 2 to 4 and then from 6 to 8. They're just drop-in at any time over those.
And it's informal, isn't it? Yeah,
that's the framing of it. It's just for chat or pick up information.
Yeah, and I think everyone is getting the sensitivity of this and the difficulty. And from an outsider looking on, it seems that great efforts has been done to try and make this as easy as possible for those who were directly affected by that. Leanne, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much,
bye-bye.
Greg.
That's Professor Leanne McCormack, Truth Recovery Independent Panel Co-Chair. So when is the election going to happen? 6 weeks gets bandied around an awful lot, and I think a lot of people think the election has to happen 6 weeks after the Dáil is dissolved, the dissolution of the Dáil. On the internet, I saw that it was 30 days, which means, so if it were 30 days and they wished to hold the election on November 22nd, that means they could call the election as late as October 23rd. So we've still got quite a window, another 6 days, which means that the election could still be facilitated on the 22nd. I heard other information that they only have to give 22 days notice. And the favourite date at the moment is the 29th of November, which means theoretically, the government doesn't have to call the election until 22 days or even 30 days before that, the very end of October or the start of November. The finance bill is the biggie. That's getting that over the line. Once that's over the line, it's a blank sheet. Now, we do know there was a trade trip to Poland scheduled for a couple of weeks. That's been cancelled now. So look, it's going to be the end of November, the start of the December. It just depends on how much notice they want to give the opposition, really, because they've got the posters, they've got the polls, and would feel they're in very good shape. A caller says, this man surely must be a conspiracy theorist. This injection was 100% safe and effective. I understand where you're coming from. He wasn't at all. He was part of the majority, arguably, that that go along and accept that this is maybe the right thing to do. And they're told it's, for the most part, safe. But obviously that's not the case. His life is being destroyed, hopefully. Hopefully his condition improves. Oh, my God, says another, that poor man. God love him. Please, God, he gets some ease. That's so scary. It is indeed very scary. In relation to our conversation with Paul about the junction, good morning. Read that junction on the Ballard Buffet to Carndonagh Road. That junction used to be okay to exit until trees were planted there. There's no visibility at all now. And you have to nearly be at the white line before you see what's coming from Ballyliffin. That's no good, is it? You know, that's really no... I mean, if there are trees that need cutting down, maybe that's they. Because we don't want to see a very serious road traffic collision there. And given the speeds... we're likely to. All right, Highland Radio's Lunchtime Lives continue. You're being invited to join us at 1 p.m. today for another episode of Lunchtime Lives. It's coming to you live on our Facebook page from Max Light in Lifford. They'll be talking all things lighting and home decor with expert tips from Max Light's in-house interior designer. Whether you're looking to brighten up your space or add the perfect finishing touches to your home, they've got you covered. Right, so you can just watch this, right, if you're interested in this type of stuff. But what's great about this, it's live and it's actually in the business premises as you're watching, which means you can ask a question. What's better for this? What's better for that? Is LED better? Will LED do this? Or switches or anything like that there? So just watch on the Highland Hub Facebook page at 1 p.m. live from Max Light in Lifford, and you'll get all your questions answered there if you're thinking of changing a little bit. As you would know, a big protest demonstration march in Dublin this week by small and medium businesses talking of the struggles, particularly those there's lots of them. For example, it's very important, and that's why we're kind of using the show to emphasise, it's very important that a lot of businesses that you probably think are really successful, and many of them are, by the way, but there are a lot of businesses that are on the precipice. We are on the brink, and it's already too late for many, of something really quite significant, whereby you can go into towns and villages that were once vibrant with pubs and restaurants and cafes that they're no longer open. And you wonder, well, where are they? Well, you heard on Highland Radio, because we tried to make it very clear that they're struggling and they're deciding to end the business because there's no point being a busy fool. And they're calling on the government to put in measures to make them more viable as businesses, because decisions are being made, like on wages, pensions, sick leave and all that type of stuff. Decisions are being made that the cost is being picked up by the business owner. Wage increases, I think I mentioned that. And they're looking for some incentive to offset, or some support to offset the overheads, which means they're not making money. They are the busy fool. And I say that with absolute respect. Stephen McCahill is chair of the Ardra Town Traders Association. He joins us on the show now. Stephen, imagine why. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I am doing good, Stephen. The phone's a bit crackly. Hopefully it improves. And Ardra is like 1,000 towns right across the country. There is a great fear that a basic offering to tourists and locals could be lost if conditions for doing business aren't improved.
Yeah, that's right. I was in Dublin last night, and I was staying in a hotel there, and I was just looking at, the owner was telling me 98% occupancy for the last year. I mean, that's Dublin.
Stephen, is it possible that you could hang up and we could call you back? Because that line is very clicky, right, and it's an important message. Okay. Is that okay? All right, we'll get Stephen McCahill back on the line, and you can tell me just as soon as he's back on. Just if you're out in the roads, there's an oil spill on the Remelton to Rathmullen Road at Rye. Drive with care, folks. They can come on you as quick as as quick as lightning. Greg, Recar and Donna, the verge is overgrown to the northwest direction. It needs removed and set back, a hard shoulder, but also needs the local roads raised. It is a terrible junction. A lot of people agreeing with a previous listener there. Hi, Greg. Fair play to you for broadcasting Larry's COVID vaccine injury story. It's heartbreaking to hear the devastating effect it had on him. I'm also aware of a number of individuals who have had serious adverse reactions to the vaccine. Internationally, instances of cardiac conditions, myocarditis and pericarditis have massively increased post-2019 in countries with high uptakes of the vaccine. And in a way, Larry's story is somewhat different in that he actually has... proof that his is a vaccine injury. There's many people with changes in their health. They don't have that evidence. Stephen, sorry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm indeed, Greg.
Greatly improved. Right, pick up the story. You were in a hotel last night in Dublin and you were having a conversation.
I was talking to the owner and he had 98% occupancy in the last year the restaurants, three or four restaurants in the hotel all doing great business. You can't relate that to rural Ireland, and that's the sad reality that our government is doing. They're comparing us to the big cities, and they need to segregate that in some form or other, because like what's happened there in that last budget, like, has been just terrible for small businesses with no reduction in VAT rate, an increase in the minimum wage. Nothing against any of those increase in the minimum wage, but it needs to be supplemented with some facility for people who are putting their head on the line and employing people and keeping rural Ireland alive, because rural Ireland is so wonderful. It's where we live. It's a great place to live. We have fantastic community spirits. We have great sporting facilities. We have everything here, and it's a great place, and we need to bring back our people who have left. But we need to show them some incentive. We need people who are coming back to see that if they set up in business, that it's not a rope around their neck, that they have an opportunity to develop. And we in Ardra, as you know, have always been on the positive, and we are still very much on the positive. Because when our hotel closed, when our hotel was not available for commercial use anymore, we as a group came together, and our flagship, of course, is ardra.ie, and we set up a WhatsApp group for accommodation providers, and I think we have about maybe 50 accommodation providers, and it's just wonderful, and it's quite emotional to see it, particularly during the Cup of Tea Festival, where if someone call to some provider and they had an accommodation, it went up on the WhatsApp right away that there's three people looking for three rooms, and they were facilitated within minutes, and it's worked, and we've worked wonderfully well on that, and it's worked terribly well, and we've dealt with that. Now, we don't have a hotel, but what has developed is some very, very good facilities for people.
It's an accommodation structure,
Yes, we got that right. But we were kind of caught offside, Greg, probably with McLean's closing.
Mm-hmm. So just in terms then of, you know, having a restaurant service in the town, the business people working together in that regard again, what can you tell us about that, Stephen?
Yeah, because what happened was we probably got caught offside. We didn't anticipate McLean's closing because Michelle and Michael have put in so much work in there. But the reality is, when you talk to them, it's very emotional because they tried hard, but the cost factors against them, like everybody has their own cost factors, but in their case, they just couldn't make it work, and they had to make a decision. They were the flagship of evening eating in the town themselves and Nancy's, and then suddenly they're out of the picture. So the positivity of our draw, as it always is, that the key trained people came together on Tuesday night, and I was so impressed with them. They decided, look, the rest of us will have to take up the slack of what has happened. So they're filling in the spaces. So other restaurants have opened now to facilitate that, to ensure that there's a service of food supply in town for evening eating. And that is so important to us. And I just hope, and this is so important, that people in the community, in the communities of Ardra, Glenties, Portdue, and wherever, that they support the local tradespeople. They got to do it, because if they don't, they won't have rural Ireland alive. So I know from driving in from Dublin, you see all these little rural towns all closed up for sale signs. And look, we just have to get doing what we can ourselves. Yeah. Governments tend not to do anything, to initiate anything. They may support, but we as a community have to work. And that's what we're doing in our job. We're always we'll make our drag great again, as we always have in the past, and we will look at it as in a positive light. But we need everybody to go out and support their local restaurants now, because the restaurants in particular are under a lot of pressure. I was shocked the other night to listen to some of the restaurant owners tell me that, like, some of their foods, their ingredients has gone up by 100% in 6 months. Like, this is just unbelievable.
We heard yesterday. We heard yesterday the day before.
Hard to survive, Greg.
Yeah, we heard yesterday the day before. Just a bag of goujons had gone from just under €4 to €12. You know, like, that's just one popular dish. Now, what do we do here? Because tragically, when we talk about restaurants and even hotels actually in our region being under pressure and threatened with closure, it goes back to, you can link it back to the price gouging in Dublin. The hotels that are busy all year round, the hotels that rip people off because Taylor Swift's playing or Gareth Brooks or whomever it is.
Yeah.
And the reason why there isn't support for our local businesses in our draw and elsewhere is because of the greed of some of those businesses. Yeah. That's heartbreaking, because whilst the city thrives, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts in rural Ireland. I mean, I was in Milford yesterday, a beautiful town on the hillside.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't require much to bring particularly the upper part of that town, and people will know the areas I'm talking about. There's some lovely houses at the head of town, but it wouldn't take much to bring life back into that town. It wouldn't take much to reinvigorate our draw, as positive as it is, to ensure that the local football team can field a football team, to ensure that if there is a restaurant open, there are young people that are actually able to be employed and work there and start their employment lives. Do you know what I mean, Stephen? But it's going to take a will. It's going to take a will and a bigger plan than we have.
It does. It needs everybody to support. Like, one of the things I was talking to the people representing the Restaurants Association in the negotiations, where they hoped they would get the VAT rate reduced. And the people that really let them down, as far as they were concerned, was rural TDs. They didn't give them the support they required. So we need everybody, rural TDs, rural Ireland has to be supported, because we have a whole generation away, Greg. We have a generation that hasn't come back. They left after them, and they're all very well educated, and they've gone all around the world. Some of them really want to come back, but we need to incentivize them to come back. We need to be fit to say, look, there's property in Milford. If you go and buy that, you'll get an incentive to set yourself up in business. We need to help. I don't mind the minimum wage going up to $13.50 or whatever it is, but that it should not affect the business and put the business under jeopardy. It should be fit to say, the government should be fit to assist these people in some way. But if they're doing it in other areas, like, and they can do it. Like, I mean, I look at the Bacon Home Grant. It's one of the best things that ever came out in this country. And plus, of course, in Donegal, we're blessed with a particularly good guy in charge of it with common sense, and Vincent Cranley.
But he's down your way, isn't he? He's down your way, Stephen, yeah.
I'm cutting out this thing about red tape to try and fill in a form at the minute. Jeez, you need to be a whiz kid. Most businesses are just trying to survive.
All right, Stephen, but let me point it to you, though. But Stephen, if we look at in rural Ireland, and this, I believe what I'm about to say is facts. So in rural Ireland, we're seeing a centralisation of Garda stations. That's happening. In rural Ireland, we're seeing farmers being encouraged to grow trees, have massive battery farms, to have solar panels and what have you. The county development plan has to align with the national development plan. It's discouraging people building in rural areas. It's incentivizing and encouraging people to build in urban areas. A lot of the infrastructural investment is in urban areas, in Letterkenny, which is drawing from the rest of the county. So then you can see what's happening to the farming industry, which I referenced, but also our fishing industry. You know, these are traditional fishing industries. So if you look at the direction of traffic, where things are going, I don't think it's anti anything or controversial to say that and our investment in the electricity infrastructure to sustain data centres and multinationals, right? It doesn't take a scientist to work out that there is a plan which is actively there to discourage living in rural Ireland. Am I being controversial there?
No, you certainly are not. You look at, for instance, the N56 prime example. people, I mean, I'm an auctioneer by trade as well, and I was doing that evaluation for a family for probate, and they had 1 mile of a road frontage on the M56. And to me, they had 10 to 12 sites on that. And their families, the grandchildren of the lady that passed away, wanted to come and build houses there. Off the M56, they could not do it. And that meant those kids emigrated. They left the area. Sadly, they're all gone now. But the point is that you could not build off the M56. So what does that mean? The guy that owns the farm can't let his kid build on the farm? These things are not being addressed, and ministers, and we talk them on, they just sort of pussyfoot them around. But when you look at planning is all centralised, as you say. There's no effort. There seems to be a gen. I don't know what they're going to do with rural Ireland. I really don't know what's going to be done with rural Ireland the way it's been planned, because everything is centralised, every aspect of it, and everything feeds into it. When I was a young lad, after I left college, I worked for Lions D for my sins for a couple of years, and I remember selling. I remembered so well, a quarter pound of tea was 23 cents, but in the big multiples, they were selling it for 19. Now, they obviously had a deal with Lyons at the time, but I was just saying to myself, that's driving that little shop out of business, because he can't sell it that. He's selling it 2 pence below the price. Everything centralises around central, and that's what's sad, because the little local shop was a great place to be, and there was a whole human aspect to it. But our way of life in rural Ireland, our football, our sports, every aspect of our life is so nice. We need support. We really need support, and we need everybody to come up to the table and support rural Ireland.
Yeah, okay. And as you say, locals need to get out and support, because a lot of it is use it or lose it. But also, we do need a rural Ireland plan. We need assurances. Yeah. We need to find out what our future is. Our children need to find out, do you have a future here, or is it
100%?
You know, so
you're so right.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a great deal to ask. I don't care if it's Fianna Fáil. I don't care if it's Fine Gael. The Man on the Moon or Sinn Féin are independent. The people of rural Ireland need to. Let's have an honest conversation. What is the future? What is the future?
Greg, it's such a very valid point that it needs to be brought to a head. What is happening to rural Ireland? Because as I said, if you go to planning now, the push is towards centralists. They don't want to put services out into you in the country. It's all towards central control. It's coming right down from central government, and everything is created towards central control. And it's just so disappointing, because we in Ardra and places like that, we are so proud of our town. We contribute in every way to a positive approach towards working at things. We don't ask for much from governments. We do our best. As I said, we're doing now, we're asking everybody to come out and support the restaurants, come out and support the shops, the little local shops, because I remember an old couple in town one time used to go away every Saturday when the bus service came into central big towns, and they used to buy about £50 worth of groceries. But in a week, they would only use about £10 or £15 worth.
Yes.
So the point was, they were buying, the net cost was too high, because they were saying, oh, we should get this at 20% cheaper in a big shop and a multiple, but they can't get in their local shop. But their local shop, they were actually, if they're buying there all the time, their net cost for the week would have been less. So it's sort of false economy sometimes about all these cheap things, because your local shop has given your daughter and your son a job. And don't forget that. That's what's keeping your place alive.
All right.
And it's so important that people support each other.
By the way, did you ever get an electric charger in Ardra?
No. Funny enough, that we had a...
Well, we're bandraxed. If we can't get
we're fighting
sort
for
of
that
a,
one as well.
Oh, my word. All right. That's 3 years, I think, since the last
one. Yeah,
week
you see,
that.
Because the sports clubs, the GAA now are getting to... Now, I'm not sure what the cost factor for the GAA is, because if there's a cost factor, I don't see how viable it'll be. But they have been nominated to get... a facility, but we're really like it's something. 10 years ago, I was at council meetings, and the whole plan was to roll out all these services. But one of the traders said the last night that he had people staying, and they had to go 6 miles to another town to get their service, and get a taxi back, and then go back over again 4 hours later when their car was ready.
Ugh.
That just can't continue.
Okay.
These are basic rights that we deserve to have.
All right. I agree. Stephen, listen, thanks very much indeed. Stephen McCahill there, who is chair of the Ardra Town Traders Association. Got an email in from a listener that reads as following. Regarding the item on yesterday's show in relation to breast cancer being linked to alcohol use, I really found this item upsetting. I had breast cancer 10 years ago, and in the years since that, I've known many friends and relations and others who've been diagnosed with breast cancer, and none of those were because of alcohol misuse. The sort of headline's very upsetting to many sufferers of breast cancer who do not drink or who may have had an occasional drink. Now, I fully understand exactly where you're coming from, and that's your feelings, and I wouldn't in any way try and challenge your feelings. They are yours. But in 1 in 8, I believe the statistic is, in 1 in 8, excessive alcohol use is linked to the development of breast cancer. So you and very sadly the people that you know that got breast cancer and hopefully got through that battle and are at the other end, that would be in the 7. But there's, when we're trying to say, you know, what, and it was said yesterday too, there are far more factors that are to be cancer can be attributed to, but it's 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 that you can get a direct link to alcohol. So I suppose whilst maybe getting that information out to that 1 in 8 women, we don't want to upset the 7 other women who didn't drink much or at all who got breast cancer. But I hope you understand that It's actually in the interest maybe of a woman who's drinking excessively and is at greater risk of breast cancer. The information is for that person, not to offend people that it doesn't apply to. But as I say, it's your experience, and you're not the first person that said that either. It's just that it's to reach those that maybe drink too much alcohol and that increase their chances or indeed led to their chances of getting breast cancer. It's not the other 7 or 8 that don't fall into that category, if that makes sense or helps. But as I say, it's your feelings, and I'm not in any way questioning them. And I'm sorry if you found it upsetting.